to the Dive into Reiki podcast. I'm Natalie, and together we will enjoy a series of conversations that explore the journey of Reiki practitioners and teachers from all lineages. 100% Reiki-focused stories, 100% human. Welcome to a new episode of the Dive into Reiki podcast with a wonderful guest and a very interesting topic, which is Reiki research. We have with us Dr. Natalie Dyer, PhD. Natalie is a research scientist with Connor Hall Health at University Hospitals and president of the Center for Reiki Research. Natalie completed her Bachelor of Science degree from the University of Toronto, doctorate in neuroscience at Queen's University, and postdoctoral fellowships in psychology and integrative medicine at Harvard University and Harvard Medical School. She has published many scientific papers and book chapters on postmaterialist science, psychedelics, and the therapeutic effects of integrative medicine practices, including Reiki, yoga, acupuncture, and mindfulness. Natalie is the co-editor of the book Expanding Science, Vision of a Postmaterialist Paradigm, and the forthcoming book Infinite Perception, The Power of Psychedelics for Global Transformation. Natalie is also an energy medicine practitioner and teacher with clients around the world. Her passion is in understanding and addressing mental and physical health from a psycho-spiritual perspective. She lives in the woods on the east coast of Canada with her husband, artist Louis Dyer, and their daughter. And before we move on to the interview, just a little reminder that if you really like the podcast and get a lot from it, you can support us by going to our Patreon, Dive into Reiki, and becoming a support member for less than a cup of coffee. It makes a big difference in terms of helping with the editing, the hosting of the podcast, and all the costs that are implying it. Thank you so much. And now on to the interview. Thank you, Natalie, and I really appreciate you made the time to be here.
Thank you. Thanks, Natalie. I'm happy to be here.
Perfect. So I start every interview with the same question. What was your first encounter with Reiki, and what cultivated about you or Reiki to you?
Yeah, it's a good question. So I heard of Reiki before, but it wasn't until around, I guess it was 2008, that I actually pursued Reiki and had an experience with Reiki. So it's kind of serendipitous and just how a lot of people have come across Reiki, I guess. I was just at an event. So it was a fundraiser and they had different holistic practitioners. And so you paid a certain fee. I think it was supporting Kenya and building homes in Kenya. And then you got to spend time with different psychics or in my case, a Reiki practitioner. So a lot of the psychics were taken and I was a little late to the day and there was a Reiki practitioner available. And I just kind of had no choice. It was like, it's like the only person left. So I thought, okay, I'll go speak with this Reiki person. And so he did a assessment of my chakras. And at that time I was spending a lot of time doing meditations with my chakras and kind of still new to a lot of that, but really diving deep into it and like really getting into it. So I was spending a lot of time on making sure my chakras were aligned and all of that. And he picked up on that. He said, oh, you've been doing lots of meditation. Your energy is really good. And there's nothing for me to work on. And I was like, oh, okay. And so we just had a conversation. So I asked him, I didn't know anything about Reiki and it seemed really natural and intuitive to me to as a practice. And I thought, well, he seems to know what he's doing. So I took training with him. And then through the training was when I really had the experience of Reiki because I never actually went for a session or anything. A lot of people, their first experience is having a session. He was, you know, reading my energy and stuff, but he wasn't actually giving me a Reiki session. So until I started practicing with him and then family and friends, and I started to feel the energy and saw the effects that I started to realize this really is something. And it just seemed really natural to me as a practice. It seemed like just obvious and very intuitive and got really, really excited about it. So then kept the training up until the master's level. And yeah, then it's changed my life in many, many ways. And it still excites me today. So
and I love your combination. So I'm a big science nerd, hidden in the closet. I love quantum physics. I love neuroscience. So when I saw that, I was like, okay, you're the perfect person to talk a little bit about that background neuroscience, who can impact the way you perceive Reiki, or perhaps how we can prove that Reiki actually has an effect on people.
Yeah. So with I guess with neuroscience, there hasn't been too many studies done with the brain itself and Reiki, but I do, my research is broad in integrative medicine and health and stress and anxiety. And my PhD was in anxiety regulation in the brain, and Reiki certainly helps with anxiety. So at the very basic level, if you want to just be materialist about it, you don't need to get post-materialist or non-materialist, but Reiki elicits the relaxation response. The parasympathetic nervous system, our rest and digest. So switching us out of that stress response state into a relaxed state, very, very important. You have to be in that state to have a proper healing response. So if we're stressed, we're not using our resources in the right way for healing. We're using it in a threat survival kind of sense. So the very basic level, that's how Reiki helps. And of course, you're going to see that in the brain with expressions of different neurochemicals, and you're going to see relaxation in terms of the brain waves. So we're going to see an increase in alpha wave activity, the deeper, slower waves of theta and delta, and even maybe some gamma waves, which are like highly focused concentration that you see in some really experienced meditators, because I believe the benefits for the practitioner of Reiki are going to be similar to the benefits of a meditation practice as well, because for me, it's very, very similar to a meditation. I don't know if you find that as well. And you're going to find synchronization between the practitioner and the client. And that hasn't been measured with Reiki specifically, but with other healing techniques where you see like the brain waves of the practitioner and the receiver starting to sync up. So a transference of that relaxation and that higher consciousness, if you want to call it that.
I love, because sometimes we talk about interconnection and, you know, all these things, and they're very abstract. And then other times also some practitioners think they are doing something to the person. They don't realize like we're entraining together and entering a space of relaxation. Mm-hmm. So I love that what you said is like, okay, interconnection is real. It's not something like a very term. It's not woo-woo. It actually has a reality in science and the way we work. So you're making
absolutely
time.
Yeah, even with heart rate, I mean, your body will, they've done a study with like a fake heart rate, and people's heart rate will sometimes entrain with this fake heart rate. So there is natural synchronization and entrainment that happens that we can modify through, these artificial means, but also within these practices. And the more that these signals synchronize, so this electromagnetic radiation, which is the electrical activity, the more they synchronize, the more the healing is powerful. So we see that with social interaction. We see it with learning. We see it with a lot of different behaviors as well, beyond just energy medicine. So yeah, it's very exciting. It's still early research, so there's a lot to learn.
I love that we're going there, because when you describe these entrainment, I'm imagining groups. And like now that we're going to a world with very chaotic, very violent, it almost feels like our heartbeats are completely out of sync, and we're in this like survival model of us like losing the center. So practices like Reiki could help people relax and be able to find a heartbeat and then train with other people again. And and that is beautiful, because it's like a very practical way to explain it, and it has a very good benefit socially as well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And even just outside of like practicing Reiki, just when you go into an environment that you find stressful, instead of reacting and joining that stress and amplifying it, bring on your Reiki and start to send out that other signal. And hopefully the people around you will start to entrain into that, and you can change the space, really. There's some research on that as well. So bringing your Reiki into the world also really, really helps.
I love that, because in Japanese Reiki, you have that your presence is as healing as the hands, right? When I go to advertising, not every day, because, you know, it's New York, I'm a crazy Scorpio, but most days I try to just my presence, like to bring a little bit of sanity. So then science, what you're saying is like, Reiki is more than just hands-on, like your presence or bringing the Reiki. How will you describe that in your own words?
That's a good part. presence, I mean, I think of it as a state of being, a state of consciousness that changes the body, and people pick up on that. So how they pick up on it, you know, maybe through their own entrainment. It's like, oh, I feel a little different now. So this person is making me feel this way. And people want to be more around you more and feel better around you. And yeah, I don't know if that's what you're looking for, but.
I just love almost like what I hear from you is like, and please excuse because I'm like, as a writer, like it's a journey that make everything to a headline, but almost like we're wired for these practices. We're wired to train and Reiki practice is a method that we can actually bring that entrainment and healing. So it's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's a very natural thing. Obviously, presence is our true self. So that's, you know, without any of the contents of the mind, concept, free awareness, just being. So that is, you can't get more natural than that. And then even as kids and adults, as we hurt ourselves, we put our hands there and, you know, just totally subconsciously just put our hands and they feel better. So I think it is a very natural process and something that we've just maybe forgot collectively. And, but of course, as you know, throughout different traditions are similar practices as what we call biofield healing or biofield therapies in integrative medicine at this point. So Qigong, for example. So a lot of recognition of this natural potential that is now starting to gain popularity in the West and hopefully results in like a cultural shift in medicine as well.
Thank you. And that's a question because obviously you work in an environment that is very academic, right? When I hear Harvard, I almost also feel like people who are very intellectual. So you bring this concept of biofields and healing practices. How hard it is to get it? Are they opening up to it? Like a little bit of your experience with that.
Yeah, I think so. Just from the beginning of, say, my doctorate, so that would be 2007 or so to now, there's been a huge change in the attitude from what I've seen. So the beginning of my doctorate studying meditation, even though there was some mindfulness studies, it was still seen as like a taboo or unscientific. And now thousands and thousands and thousands of studies, it's now accepted as a state of mind, a practice, something that can benefit your life in so many different ways. Mindfulness is everywhere. So, and tons of research supporting it. So now that's more accepted. And I think biofield healing will follow a similar trajectory. And I think when it comes to this concept of the biofield, so it gets controversial because people will think that this is some energy that hasn't been detected, for example, and maybe it is. Or maybe it's just all these different fields that are already being detected interacting. So we're already measuring the field of the heart. We're measuring the field of the brain. We're measuring photons emitting from the body, heat, all of this different electromagnetic radiation in the soup that we're constantly, it's dynamic. It's emanating from us. We're interacting with different fields from the environment, from devices, from the earth, from each other. So all of that is just part of biophysics. So it's not controversial if you're aware of biophysics, and everyone should be aware that there's heart fields and all that. I mean, obviously. So the controversial part is it some subtle life force energy that we haven't measured yet? And that seems to be where the debate is that, oh, this energy doesn't exist, therefore these practices are nonsense, is sort of one approach. Or maybe it's interacting with all these fields that we already know exist, and maybe you don't need to have any other so-called subtle energy. Or certain people can just pick up on those fields, and that's the subtle aspect. It is subtle already. So there's that side of it. But there's more and more research coming as well. So we know that it helps pain. We know that it helps stress and anxiety for patients. It's in hospitals all over the US and the UK and Canada. So it's obviously helping patients. The debate there is like, is there this energy? Is there not this energy? But the practices do work. And of course, there's those that think it's all placebo. But there's ways that we test for that with placebo controls, like fake Reiki, for example, someone not trained in Reiki, pretending to give someone Reiki, and then they may benefit a little bit, but not as much as getting a real Reiki session, for example. I think it's a real issue of like a paradigm problem. So a materialist paradigm versus maybe a post-materialist paradigm that doesn't see everything as reducing to matter or smaller parts of a bigger whole. Yeah, and we're not sure that it's an energy or is it an information. We know that consciousness and love play some kind of role in it, but there's so much more to learn on what's actually happening to help convince, I guess, the skeptics if we want to, but more importantly, to change culture and to embrace these practices as part of integrative medicine.
I love that. And I have never heard about this difference, like, is it just perceiving what already exists or is it something different? And I found it fascinating. And now I'm like, I hope you're going to do a lot of research and let us know. The other thing that is very curious is, like, intuitively, for example, when you go to Japanese practices or many as all spiritual practices, they have the heart as a center. They have these things that have a feel. They intuitively felt there was something there. So in a way, it almost like legitimizes all these things that seem like very woo-woo or very like, okay, those were ancient people, but they actually had some truth in it. So it's crazy.
It's yeah, it's a really good point. I mean, we weren't measuring these fields before, right? We didn't have EEG 2000 years ago when they're saying there's this energy emanating. And so maybe that, you know, maybe we are it all are already measuring it.
It's fascinating because, and at the end, as you say, like, it will not impact the practice. The practice is still working, that we know or not, but it's still kind of interesting, especially if that allows, as you said, it's not so much the practice, but it allows it to be included for healing and like in medicine, like all over the world, versus just being a very expensive, in New York, it's very expensive to get a New York, like a Reiki session. Mm-hmm. So it's literally a luxury having Reiki.
Yeah, it seems to be the case, unless you're in the hospital, that Reiki can be pricey. But yeah, that just a quick point about that. We don't need to know how something works to have it be included in medicine. That's been done in so many different, even antidepressants. They didn't really know how they were working when they put them on the market.
And even the
way they thought they worked, they don't work. So it's really not an excuse, in other words, for the skeptics to say, oh, we don't know how that's working, so let's not use it. So, because it does work. It helps with pain, anxiety, stress, fatigue, nausea, all of these things. So it's really good for symptoms. The evidence for curing anything, for example, is not there yet. Maybe it can, but it's really about symptoms. So helping with quality of life, meaning in life, satisfaction, spiritual understanding and growth, these kinds of things, which enrich life and make life better and more worth living, increase your joy, for example, rather than maybe curing a disease. But maybe as we come to understand it more, then we will get to that level. But it is helping with those things. So that's really what matters first. And then let's try to dig and see what's actually going on, because that's interesting to me as well. It's like, how is it working?
Yeah, no, it's super interesting. I used to work with people before the pandemic, people who were living with cancer. And the one thing they said is Reiki gave them hope. Mm. And when they had hope, then they could actually go through the treatment. At the end, like, we diminish this stuff, like hope, joy, but they are key for people to actually take in the next step and be able to take care of their health. So
yeah, absolutely. Super, super key and important, and help with healing as well. Not just like the experience of having that journey, which is a very difficult journey, and helping that be an easier journey, but actually can put your body and your mind into a state where you can heal. So yeah, we really don't know the extent of its healing ability, but yeah.
Personally for you, like when you started Reiki, probably over 15 years ago, and now, a little bit, how has your perception of Reiki practice evolved, or even the way you practice daily has evolved through the years?
That's a good question. I think I was more systematic in the beginning, maybe. And I've kind of trusted the intuition aspect a little bit more, go a little more intuitive with the practice. I also trust the practice more, just knowing all of the research and you know, as we continue to practice it, we gather more data and we have more support for it, and that can strengthen our practice through our belief. Of course, you want to have confidence in what you're doing as well. If you're kind of reluctant, you're not going to be as powerful, is not the right word, but you know what I mean.
You're going to be distracted, frazzled, and it's not the same. You're not holding the space with that serenity that you have when you're...
Exactly. Yeah. And I think in the love component, that's been a big part of it for a long time for me, but the extent of that has changed the practice. Is in the beginning, that wasn't really taught to me, as like, this is a practice of love and compassion so much as energy and where you put your hands, and more of like a meditation. But I learned through the practice how important having that love and compassion for the client or patient is, and how that creates that connection for that energy or information to transfer and help the person. So that's been a really important aspect as well, I'd say.
That's interesting. As soon as I started meditating more and paying attention to the Reiki precepts, I also got more into compassion and kindness for self and others. But when they taught me, it was mostly place your hands here and do this. You get and can, because that's one thing I haven't talked very much in the podcast about, the love and compassion aspect. We talk about many techniques and modalities, but I would love if you can expand a little bit on the necessity for love and compassion as an element in the practice.
Yeah, I'd love to. So when we think of love, there's all obviously so many different kinds of love, but when we think of like a pure unconditional love, that's the love that I'm talking about, like this, what we can call universal love. I think there's other terms for it as well, agape, but that's more specific to like a higher spirit or God. But this is a connecting force. This is the unity. So I think of love as connecting different consciousnesses, and that we're all part of this great love, this one mind, this one consciousness that's connected through love. And so when we're tapping into that, then we can connect to the person better. And then we're able to enhance that entrainment, if we want to use that word, or just connect with them and send them this healing energy, these healing instructions or information, through building that bridge with the love. So the degree to which you're feeling love for the person, or just love in general, just holding that energy and love without attachment. So the more you do that, the stronger that flow is. At least that's what I've found in my experience. And that's what we're starting to study as well. So, and when we survey biofield healers, not necessarily ones trained in certain techniques, also natural healers, people that from a young age just felt like they could do this work. They all state that love or compassion or both is really, really key. So I think that's a really important factor in connecting with the person. Also having that intention and that focus and that focused mind is super important as well. But I find that the love for me in my practice, the degree to which I'm feeling that is the degree to which the effect is more prominent, beneficial.
That is very beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. And I think we're scared of the word love often, you know, like in some cultures. I had a client, she came and she said, what do you feel when you place your hands on me? I'm like, don't freak out. Love is, you know, I'm not going to stalk you. She never came back, right? because we're not so open to receiving love from people we don't know. So I love that you're sharing that. And also sometimes, as you said, there is no one there. You're just holding the space of love around you. I find that it's hard to express for many of us. You know, because we sound a little bit like hippie or like, you know, like we are not grounded, but actually the more grounded in your practice you are, the easier it is to hold that loving space as well.
I completely agree. And love, it's a simple thing. Hopefully everyone has had an experience of love, and it really binds us together. And I know it's for some reason cheesy or something, like people don't want to. But and compassion, maybe that's a lighter word. I feel compassion. I feel kindness. I feel, like I want the best for you, you know, those kinds of things.
But it's love. It's stronger than kindness. It's really...
of course. Yeah.
We may say loving kindness, but it is a very beautiful, powerful feeling. So I'm really glad we're out of the closet with the love world. Because you've been also studying and you are like talking a lot about this effect of love. Is there any way to study or to measure or anything we can do?
So there's different forms of love, as I say, and anything in the psychology area, which love falls into, is measured usually by a self-report questionnaire. So that's the case for any anxiety, depression, quality of life, all of that is all just asking people. So for measuring love, we created the universal love scale. So there's different scales for like maternal love, romantic love, but we wanted one that's just for this love for all of existence, basically. So universal love transcends the ego, it transcends attachment. It's just this pure love. And so we created a scale to measure that, even though, you know, it's like an iffy thing, like measuring love. But if you want to study anything, if you want to study if love increased, for example, or if you want to study the importance of love or love as a mediator of healing, you need to have these kinds of measures. So we created a scale called the Universal Love Scale. that measures the embodiment of that. So across different dimensions. So items such as I wish for world peace. So someone presumably high in universal love is going to want a peaceful world. You're not going to want violence and conflict. You're going to wish for the well-being of others. You want others to be happy. So these are kind of the items, some of the items for the scale. So then people, you know, mark where they're at on that. And then we can then look if a certain intervention, meditation, Reiki, for example, increased their sense of universal love. And we can also look at how much does universal love play a role in the effect of a Reiki session, which is what we're looking at right now. So I find that really interesting is how much is the love important? How much is the mindfulness or the focus important? How much is the intention important? And like disentangling all of that, just for personal interest, really.
But I think it's also great, for example, and when we're teaching, you know, like we tell people, don't get distracted, don't get obsessed by sensation, right? When you're in a, and also people are really scared when they do the first session, they're like, am I doing this right or not? And when you're in a space of love, there is no fear.
Right.
So when you're thinking about it, it makes sense. When you're in a space of love, you're going to be more focused, less distracted. You're going to be less fretting about it. You know, you're going to have a deeper session. It kind of intuitively makes sense. But I love that you're actually going and analyzing all of that. I think it's fantastic.
Thanks. Yeah, it's a really good point about the fear. It obviously dissolves all the fear, and the fear would be, I think of the fear as the opposite of like separating and kind of keeping us in our little bubble, and we're not going to have as much of a positive influence in that way. So yeah, very good point.
And I love that you brought that opposite, because then we're thinking also of all the global challenges we're going right now is actually out of fear, you know, fears of immigrants, fear of different cultures, fears that you're going to be more powerful than I am. So it's really the more fear, and it's escalating, the more separate we all are.
Yes. So, yeah.
It's, yeah. It's that simple. It's horrible. Everything at the end is very simple, right?
It's simple, but we can't, you know, there's how many billion people and everyone has to come to their own understanding, and we can't do much about it except educate.
Exactly. Or sit in the space of love to see at least if it just moves the needle a little bit.
A little bit, yeah.
I was reading, and I like Buddhist monks, some concepts they have, you know, I don't like to complicate my practice very much, but there was this guy who said, when you cannot deal with a situation, just sit and feel love. And that's it. Like, that's the only really thing you can do when you're here. And perhaps this is in Africa or Europe. It's like, just let it go and just send love. Like, and at least it helps your space. And then you're not adding to the fretting and the fear, right?
Exactly. Yeah. If you're worried and you can't do anything about it, you should not worry.
Because
it's this energy that you can't, yeah.
It's so hard though, but that's why we have Reiki practices and all that. But like, yeah, that's...
I know, easier said than done.
When I'm 80, I'll be able to do that better. But yeah, some days I'm still like, oh!
Oh, me too.
But that's fantastic. So a little bit, so you're also, about your Reiki practice, you also teach and give sessions. I know you're on YouTube, so can you tell me a little bit of that side of you? That other, the teaching part and the YouTube part.
Yeah. I put some sessions up on YouTube. That was kind of a personal experiment. I just wanted to see if I put a Reiki session up, if people would feel it, if it would transcend the time and the space and all of that. And surprisingly, yeah, a lot of people gave really, really good feedback. And I still get really good feedback on videos that are, well, quite a few years old at this point. So it's still helping a lot of people, which is really, really great. And then teaching, yeah, I do teach it as well. And I'm just developing some online courses, which are kind of iffy about online. But at this point now, everyone's teaching online. So I think it's probably fine as long as I get a bit of face-to-face time with them as well. So that's something I'm going to be launching hopefully soon, is more of an online course presence. So forthcoming.
And I saw your video because I'm very intrigued. Actually, one day I'm going to bring one TikToker that has like hundreds of thousands of followers, right? I'm always intrigued with the hands. A lot has to do with very beautiful nails. So when I saw your video, like, okay, I respect her. I read her like bio. So I sat in front of it, and instead of judging, I'm like, let me feel it. And actually I could feel your energy very strongly. So I'm like, okay, maybe, you know, because we're very fast in judging these things. Like, you know,
oh, I know.
We're very, TikTok people. And then I'm like, okay, instead of judging, experience it. And I could feel your energy very strongly. I'm like, whoa. So, you know, an invitation to always for everyone to try and see it and just experience and let go of judgment.
Yeah, I'm very aware that it's probably perceived very weird by a lot of people. And I just started putting little like reels on Instagram, clips from those YouTube. And I'm like, yeah, a lot of people on there are probably thinking, what the heck is this? But
so what I've noticed is some people I can feel, some people I cannot, right? Some of them I'm just, and also it has to do because I'm very shallow. If they have very pretty nails, it's nails. So, but it, what I want to say, for example, I took online classes because I didn't want to talk or make an opinion before taking like the Udemy class, right? So I think it's also an invitation for people, like, just experience it. Don't judge it. It may not work for you. You may not be agreed, but like also opening that mind. Because for me, I find it interesting. Like, let me experience every single practice could go. And then I may say, this is not for me. But, you know, also like a lesson for me. And it was a big lesson. Like, okay, you're not judging anyone on TikTok or YouTube ever again, right? Like, feel it. And I think this is also a great invitation for everyone listening to the podcast. Sometimes we become very rigorous with what we learn and very attached to what we learn. But also to open that heart to these other experiences as well. Because we're talking about love, you know, love. Mm-hmm. Doesn't come just by a system that says, place your hands with cupping here.
Exactly. I'm sure there are healer, natural healers, as we call them, that have tapped into that love that are stronger than some Reiki practitioners that have practiced for, you know, 40 years, just, you know, the right technique, so to speak. So yeah, no, it's really, really important. And yeah, it's nice to have an open mind, especially like even Reiki practitioners can have closed minds, I guess.
Yeah. And it doesn't mean you have to do it, but you can like live and let live, you know, like or learn.
We all judge. It's part of how our brain works, you know.
You know it. Yeah.
So we have to like, oh, okay, I'm not going to do that anymore.
I think it's an important rewriting, like rewiring, especially as you get into Reiki practice. It's like not judging unless the person is really like someone scamming everyone. Then you can.
Yes, that's. I don't like that. Yeah. Definitely against that.
But that's,
any practitioner that says they have a special energy and it's, you know, I've seen that before. I'm channeling this special energy, no one else is, and you know, I am this great healer, and that I would be very cautious of those people.
Yeah. What other red flags? I love it because like this is like a big red flag, right? A couple more red flags for people to beware about.
Oh, that's a good one. I mean, I would always say that one. Like that. Classic narcissist, and just going with how you feel about the person. Yeah. They should lift you up. It shouldn't be all about them, you know. Just pay attention to that.
I love that because of your training for me. It's like, oh, those people, they want money. You're like, no, narcissist, that's it. You're not like labeled. So that is a good watch, especially if sometimes people who actually come to Reiki for healing because they have trouble with the self. If you go with a narcissist, then yourself is like gone.
Yeah. If you go to I've gone to a therapist before and they're talking about themselves more than you, and you're like, okay, this is about me. Sorry. Yeah. So just paying attention to that, I guess. Too much, maybe too much marketing as well. I don't know. This is my own personal opinion. I mean, everyone needs a marketer, right?
I think it's for me asking also like, how long have you practiced, and just asking a few questions to see if their practice is, you know. So my mom lives in France and she's in old people's home where they party all the time. Don't think it's like they're all wine. So this Reiki practitioner came and he said, I can cure Parkinson's if I take it at the beginning, 5 sessions. And I told my mom, like, no one goes to this person because, well, perhaps you will get me wrong and it's proven. And I'm like talking, but like, he felt very overstating something.
Yeah.
So he couldn't come anymore to the old people home. They prefer the wine. Right. Eat cheese and drink wine.
It might be better, you know, reducing stress. That's what's important.
Perfect. So for people, for example, and this is almost my last question, is like, if I'm a person in the world and I want to like bring Reiki into some communities and people say like, that's woo-woo, that's not possible. What are like a couple of sentences or places where they could refer people like, hey, this is serious. It has an effect. What will you tell them to say or to refer people to?
Yeah, definitely to the Center for Reiki Research. I work with them and we have research summaries on our website in pretty good detail. And we also have a few materials. We're putting one up as well. We just did a workshop on Reiki research And we're creating, it will be a slide deck. We have one, but we're updating it on the evidence base for it as well. So we're trying to make that easier for people so they can browse all the studies, but let's create like a nice summary or a little presentation so that they can show people. So if you wanted to give it in an old age home, you could give a little presentation based on what we would have available on the research. And it doesn't have to be non-material. Like I said in the beginning, it elicits a relaxation response. So you can totally phrase it around a relaxation technique similar to massage, but gentle touch, and that it helps reduce inflammation and these kinds of things would help, rather than saying like we're channeling energy from, you know, God or whatever.
Complex. Like sometimes I tell people, like, you can believe what you want. I work a lot in corporate because my whole life has been corporate, and I just kept this spiritual practice that lets go of anger and worry, makes you more grateful and compassionate. And you have no idea, like, how many people want that. Like,
Yeah.
I like that. Like, yeah, I want to be less worried. I want to be less angry. So sometimes people are complicated. And we may have a perception of the practice that is more complex, but I find it like, and as you said too, like just relaxation response, those things really well. And then we make it accessible to people who need it, but maybe afraid of it a little bit.
Yeah, I think everyone could use some relaxation and de-stressing. So that's a really good way to frame it.
Yeah, well, especially, I don't know, some people live in like, but even if you live in a quiet town, there is still stress with everything. You know?
I live in a quiet town and there's still, it's a train that comes through every so often.
Oh my God.
Motorcycles, there's sirens, but yeah.
Yeah, it's funny, I found New York a very peaceful city because I'm very free to be me, and everybody looks at me like, you're crazy. What do you mean New York is a peaceful city for you? I'm like, full of serenity. I'm like happy here.
Oh, that's great. I'm so glad you found that.
So I close every interview with something I call the Reiki oops, or it could be a teachable lesson. And a lot of us, when I started my journey, I started, you know, doing it the same way. I just wanted to heal people, so I didn't want to deal with their pain. And then I had the idea the symbols were like international numbers that I will call and get that energy. Like I had a lot of misconceptions that were very useful to me at the time, but then little by little, you're okay, this is not exactly like that. Is there any oops or any teachable lesson or something that happened to you that sometimes brings a smile and gave you an insight?
The first thing that comes to mind is just how I was kind of forceful with Reiki in the beginning, just in that anytime I found out someone or their mother or their brother was ill, I would be like messaging them, you know, I'll send you Reiki, to thinking, kind of like putting it on a huge pedestal in the beginning, like it's going to heal everything. And that a lot of people don't want that, and that that's not always the ethical thing to do. So I think I was like, what do they call it? Like hustling, like trying to give Reiki where it might not be welcome. So I don't do that anymore. that's the first thing that came to mind. Yeah, I don't know.
But I love that because I think we're all like that at the beginning.
Yeah, very enthusiastic.
And the family usually is like, don't give Reiki to your family, like unless they're into it, because they're all going to be like, oh.
Yeah, I don't, I can't give it to my family and I don't, and the other thing is that it's going to maybe prevent someone who's dying from dying, and it might, you know, it doesn't do that. Maybe it can do that, but it's going to help that process. And that's really important, is that people have like the accurate view of it, is that you're not going to, if they have, you know, a terminal illness, you're going to really help their comfort levels, help their hope, like you said, help their spiritual connection, make them feel happier, at peace. But you're not necessarily going to save their life. So I think that's something that sort of, I was a little over enthusiastic in the beginning, like this is going to fix everything and everyone. And so now I'm a little bit more, I don't do that as much.
No, but I think you bring a point very, very interesting. I hear a lot of Reiki practitioners like, oh, before they used to cure cancer with Reiki, or even like, and maybe they did in Japan when there were 12 practitioners all the time on people, but we don't have the results. So maybe they just transition with ease, as you said. When we are, that is actually getting attached to the result versus really letting go. And then how beautiful it is that this person, maybe the last 2 weeks, they're actually at ease and not afraid, and they can transition peacefully. For me, that is as beautiful gift as extending the life, right? They it's their journey, it's not ours. So for mm-hmm. me, what you're saying is actually even more beautiful. It's very respectful as well.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's your process. I'm here to support you, but you know, it's your process. I'm not here to like stop
exactly.
you.
Exactly. Exactly. We all will die, and that's part of life. And I don't think we're supposed to stay here. There's, you know, much more going on the other planes, other realms. And so, but it will help the process. Absolutely.
And that giving peace of mind, I think, is an easy transition. Like, I'm a little, again, Scorpio dark. Like, for me, like, dying is very interesting. Like, I want to be like conscious when I die, but I'm also really scared to be in pain. So it's like, you know, it's yes. like working on it. I'm like, if someone could support me, I would be like, you're like the best friend ever, because I really hope I can be conscious during that.
Mm-hmm.
So, mm-hmm. so thank you.
Yeah, what a way to end this.
Sorry, but it's not beautiful. Actually, I'm saying it as it's a transition. So I see it as a very, filled with light. Sorry, I went a little dark.
No. I completely agree. I understand.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Okay. Now we're like, everybody's going to be like, we're never following them on Instagram. Yeah. Freaks. But I really appreciate the openness that you came to this interview, because it's great for me to get to know you. I think for people, this interview will be super helpful. And thank you so, so much.
Thank you so much, Natalie.
And I'll be including all your links. And if anyone wants to reach or get those resources, they'll have the information. Thank you.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Dive into Reiki podcast. You can read a full transcript of today's interview at diveintoreiki.com/blog. If you found this episode helpful, please hit the subscribe button, leave me a review, or just share it with your friends. It makes all the difference. Thank you, gracias, merci.